want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 192 of the Geocaching Podcast, recorded live on February 16th, 2011. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4 and
Montu Ryder.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444. Our talkcast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now button to participate. We have a voicemail line, and we love to hear from our listeners. That number is 206-3503-GPS. We're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. This episode is sponsored by Cache Advance. See cache-advance for all your caching needs and some cool caching containers. Montu, Daryl, I know it's been warm here. How's it been for you, Montu?
It's actually, we've had a little bit of a cold spell as far as we're concerned, probably not by your standards. This past weekend, our temps were dropping down close to the 40s for the overnights, and then it warmed back up to about 60 during the days. You know, a little bit on the nippy side for here, but probably nothing like what you guys have been having up there.
Yeah, it's been high 40s for us here, and I mean, it's been nice. I wanted to go out caching today, but unfortunately didn't get a chance to.
Oh, no, it sucks when we have these nice warm-ups like this and have to work, because it's 48 degrees, and I think this time last week our high was like 5.
Yeah, it's totally a different turnaround here now. You know, we can actually go outside and be fairly warm.
Oh, definitely. It's pretty weird.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad I'm down here in Florida where it's definitely been warmer, because I definitely had a very great weekend this past weekend. As a lot of our listeners know, when I'm not out caching or working, I'm involved in a local train club. Now, this past weekend was our annual meet where people from around the country come to our club to run their trains. We ended Sunday with a train parade, which I was part of. Now, you can see the video at the link in our show notes. And let me know how many times you find me in that video.
Well, I did a couple of caches this weekend. I went out shooting with the guys on Saturday for 12 of 12, and just to go shooting with the guys and have some fun chasing down stuff that we didn't necessarily see before. And I found a cache that day, and it was by accident. You know, we were out shooting. I didn't pull out the iPhone or anything. Just I'm walking along, looked up and started laughing because it's like, that's a geocache.
Nice.
So I retrieved it. I posted a photo of where I found it, and a couple of people actually recognized the cache and knew right where it was. But it was one of those great ones where you're just walking by and it's like, that's got to be a cache. And the worst part is, it's in a small little town. AT&T service was just failing like crazy on me. I had to turn on the Virgin MiFi that I've got to get a data connection through. And finally, as we're leaving town, I was able to pull it up. And yep, sure enough, it was a cache. So, you know, I had signed the cache anyway. You know, whether it was a active cache or not, I had signed it and, you know, just got to log it a little late. And then we went out to the mall around here and found another pretty good hide over at the Bass Pro Shop that was one of the employees who had hidden it. Yeah, for those of us who have done enough caching, it's a really easy hide. But the employees at the Bass Pro loading dock there spotted us and said, you know, you'd be amazed how many times people just, you know, run around looking for it and can't find it. We walked right up to it. We had it. Another great hide. Another one of those ones that you could only do if you work with the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great because it's nice, quick, easy. You know, we were just there to check on a couple of things at the mall, and we got a cache in the process. So both of those got favorites from us, and those were the first two favorites I actually placed with geocaching.com.
Well, that's always nice when you have unexpected caches that are really good ones and that you can use your favorites on.
Oh, now, absolutely. And it's the first time we've used a favorite.
Well, that's pretty cool. Then how'd you like it? I mean,
I'm kind of indifferent, actually.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's, I don't know. I mean, we've talked about it several times, so I won't go into it now, but they're there. That's what it is.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a little too simplistic for my liking because, you know, I like these two caches, but they're not ones I'd go and make a special trip for.
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely. Now, for me, it's been warm like we talked about today, and yesterday it was pretty warm too, and I did get a chance to get out and try and find a cache. I was using the Magellan Explorer 610 review unit that I have, and I figured it's a cache that I had tried to find before and didn't find it, so I figured, hey, I'll take a different GPS out and see if I can find it. No luck for me. It was another DNF, but hopefully next time I find it. I've been in talks with the owner, and he's going to verify that it's still there for me and stuff like that. But, you know, with the 610, I do like it, and hopefully I'm going to get up a review soon here for Geocaching Podcast so you guys know what I think about it.
Well, it proves that it's not the GPS, but the finder, I guess.
I think so. And when I emailed the cache owner, I said to him, you know, because we know each other, we've met and stuff before. And I said, I don't know what's up. This is the second time I couldn't find your cache. And he does some hard caches, but he told me this is a really simple find. So I don't know. I must be losing it.
Yeah, you know, we've had a few of those caches where we just have to go, why do we host a geocaching podcast?
Garmin's opencaching.com launched Chirp a Day sweepstakes this week. Through the end of April, U.S. residents who publish approved caches on opencaching.com will get the chance to win a Chirp wireless beacon. We'll link to the detail in our show notes for those interested in checking into this giveaway.
Geocaching question of the day. The bad cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Recently, fellow geocacher Dave Bruce asked, have you ever had to use a ladder to retrieve a geocache? 47% of our vertically challenged geocachers that replied said yes, they had to use a ladder to retrieve a geocache. So tell me, have you ever had to use a ladder to retrieve a geocache? You want to find out all this and more? Come to my website, cachingnw.com, and follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Tonight, we are talking with Clay and Gus of the ET Highway. We wanted to talk with them tonight because they have, it's a ET Highway, if you don't know about it, pretty great power trail. So welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, how you doing? This is Clay.
So I kind of gave a brief description there, but can you go into a little bit more of what is the ET Highway?
Well, it's basically the power trail of all power trails. And the way it started was, you know, we did a power trail near Salt Lake that was just under 200 caches. And after doing it, we had such a great time doing it. We thought, we need to make this bigger and better and bring it closer to home, just so everybody we know, you know, they can experience it for themselves. So it's a large power trail of film containers, and you know what you're going to find, and you know where you're going to find it, basically.
Well, it sounds like an awesome thing. You know, I would love to hit it. Where exactly is it? It's in the United States. What state is it in? Where can we find it?
It's in Nevada. It's on 375, which is known as the ET Highway. And it's between Alamo and Tonopah, more or less. There's only one very small town out there called Rachel. And it's a 98-mile freeway and two lanes, paved road, in the middle of nowhere. And we've got about 900 caches on it. And then we spread it out to the six, which goes towards Tonopah.
Well, I have a vague knowledge of what the ET Highway actually refers to, but can you kind of give us an idea of why it's called that and what the significance is?
I think I'll let Clay take that one because he's familiar with the area more than I am. I actually have never been on the ET Highway until we started placing those caches, so he's got a little more on
the ET Highway.
On that.
Supposedly, it skirts the Area 51 where supposedly all the alien technology and all that stuff is. And for some reason, they call that the ET Highway. They've got the little alien out there, which is just more or less a little, I don't know, a little portable building, but it's a restaurant bar type thing. And they've got all the alien enthusiasts, UFO enthusiasts, like to go out there. And if you've seen any of those documentaries, you've seen that little place. It's just a goofy little. There's really nothing else out there. It was hard finding places to hide caches out there. There's no trees or anything. The weeds are about ankle high. So.
Now, how long did it take you to plan the ET Highway?
We actually began planning it roughly, I believe it was about August or September. It was right after GeoCoinFest of 2009 in Salt Lake City, Utah. And we actually started planning it on our drive home from GeoCoinFest, which was an 8-hour drive. But it didn't really start coming together until that following April, because it took us months just to collect all the containers needed and to get the log sheets all printed and cut and put together and stuffed into the containers. But around April is when we actually started hiding them of 2010, and it took us roughly 8 consecutive weekends of going out there and putting them down. And, you know, once we got them down, then we had an event that we were planning all along the same time. So then we had the event to worry about and finalize it, and it actually turned out to be quite a big event. You know, it was a lot larger than we thought it would be. I think there was at least probably 100, 150 people attended it. So it was a pretty big thing, and, you know, it kind of validated everything we were working for. So it was a good time.
Now, we've seen plenty of times where reviewers have issues with power caches and power trails. Did you guys work with the reviewers at all?
We did. We were hand-in-hand with our reviewer because our concern was flooding him with all these caches for him to review and publish. So before we even started, we asked him, is this going to be a problem? And he was in on it the whole way.
We were also worried that we were also worried about putting out, you know, 1,000 caches and then having them say no. So we wanted to get it all clear beforehand and make sure we could get them all published in a decent time.
Now, what was the biggest challenge that you found with the containers that you used? I mean, you said you used mostly or all film containers. Was there a challenge that you had with those?
The biggest challenge was getting the film containers. We probably spent as much time getting film containers because we both live in Las Vegas, but and you know, everybody's using digital film now, so they don't use the film containers that much. And when they do, some places aren't. They'll give them up freely. Other places they wouldn't let us have them. Then just getting out there, it's a two and a half hour drive just to the start of the trail, and then, you know, it's another, by the time you get to the end of it, it's about 4 hours. So getting the time off where we could both go out there, you know, we had my truck. I would mark them. Gus would be in the back and he'd be throwing them out. And another problem we had was just finding places to hide them. You'd think in the desert there'd be a lot of rocks, but we found ourselves looking for rocks, going in the back of the truck, and then going back out on the trail, you know, just so we had some little something to hide these containers around. So a lot of it was trying to figure out how we're going to hide these in an area that's so barren that there's nothing to hide them.
Yeah, I imagine it was a lot of work just placing the caches, let alone all the prep and everything you've already talked about. Did you guys get any help in placing the caches, or was it just the two of you?
Oh, it was the two of us, and there were about two or three weekends where Clay wasn't available, so I actually enlisted my wife into helping me, and she was actually willing. You know, she's not an avid cacher or anything, but she actually enjoyed herself. You know, she went out and gave me a hand, and we kind of took turns, you know, building the little rock piles and driving, so we use my wife and my older son.
And then as far as the cache pages go, we had a friend of ours, Vegas chick, who she helped us with getting all the, you know, we had to put the ET Highway is made up of 1,021 caches, and then we have 51 caches that are in the shape of an alien head that's just out in the middle of the desert. And then we put, I think, four other caches that are around Rachel that, if you look at it on the satellite map, they've actually put a head of Colonel Sanders out there. So we put some caches around that. So in all, we had like 1,076, 77, something like that. Anyway, we had her help us kind of build the web pages and then help us enter the coordinates. But other than that, it was the two of us and, like I said, his wife.
Now, what was one of the hardest parts of doing the trail?
I got to say, jumping in and out of the truck to actually build the rock piles and place the caches, that takes a toll. And I'm sure everybody who's done the trail agrees with us because they're the ones who got to jump out and get the container as well. So I'm sure they can relate. The only difference is they're doing it all consecutively where we split it up over 8 weekends. So, but yeah, actually placing the containers I think was the hardest personally.
Well, how about the cache pages? You mentioned you had the help from Vegas Chick. Did you guys actually do some unique pages for those or was it just kind of a copy and paste thing?
It was very much copy and paste, and actually Dawn helped us. She introduced us to macros, which we didn't realize that till we were halfway through. But every cache page is the exact same, with the exception of the coordinates. We put an attribute on there that had scuba diving, and we did that. So if there's people out there that don't like power caching or whatever, and they didn't want to get our trail in there, they could just take that attribute and say that they didn't want any of those. We figured that was a pretty safe bet since it's out in the middle of the desert, and we just kind of did that for kind of be funny and to kind of get it away from all the rest of the geocaches out there.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect that someone seeing one of these caches in Nevada would expect much scuba diving.
Yeah.
So talking about what people should plan to do when they go out for this trail, how much fuel should someone plan on to start this trip?
Well, we always recommend that everybody bring at least a 5-gallon container of additional fuel, and that's playing it safe. You know, it just depends on your vehicle. I know a lot of cachers say that they didn't use the extra 5 gallons, but it was nice to have, and they dumped it in at the end of the trail. Others say that they were glad that they had it because they actually used it to get back to a gas station. And we've actually got an email that we can send out to anybody interested, and hundreds of people have already gotten it. So just by contacting us, we can mail it to you, and it's very informative. It explains, all the recommendations, all the available fuel stops, all the local hotels in the area or motels and wherever, whatever we think that you're going to need to know is pretty much covered in this little blanket email that we've got. And if anybody's interested in that, they could email us at our email address, which is ethighway1000, the number 1000. @gmail.com, and we're more than happy to mail that out to them.
Excellent. That's a great resource. Speaking of the hotels, though, we had a guest on Cachemaniacs not long ago who was talking with the owners of the Alien, saying how thrilled they were about the power trail because they haven't had to lay off any of their staff this year.
We've also heard that this is the first time in, I think it was 26, 27 years that they didn't close it down for the winter, so and stuff like that really makes us feel proud and like we're helping. And
it wasn't our intention to help the businesses in the area, but that's a good little side note to end that on, but
now with that many caches, how long on average does it take to complete the whole power trail?
Well, we expected that it would probably take at least a couple days or 3 days, but once everybody started doing it, we were getting the reports that they were completing it in 18 hours, and we were kind of in disbelief. We were thinking to ourselves, that can't be right. These people have got to be fudging their numbers or whatever, but turns out that, if you're really hitting it hard, you're completing it in one day, just under 24 hours. And, we kind of proved it to ourselves because we've been itching to do a power trail, and, we were waiting for somebody to create one similar. And finally, Team Steve Katz did it for us down by Route 66. He's got 800 caches down there. And we ran those 800 in 12 hours. So we know, that these people aren't lying. They're actually getting it done in 18 hours. So good for them.
When we first started talking about doing the coin, power trail, we wanted to have a coin for it because we thought, that's going to be kind of neat. And we were actually going to put 1K in one day, 1K in one day. And we thought, there's no way people are going to be able to finish this in a day, so we just completely left it off the coin, and I'm kind of wishing we would have left it on there now, but it's surprising how you can get in a rhythm, and you can easily get 80 to 100 caches in an hour. I mean, they're really you could probably almost do them without a GPS. I think somebody said that they didn't even have them loaded in their GPS and was able to find the majority of them. But, of course, that's what we wanted. It was supposed to be a numbers run. It wasn't supposed to – the challenge was getting out there and finding them, not finding them, but getting them all, I guess I should say.
Now, what's been the fastest time to find all the caches so far?
No, I couldn't tell you. I have no idea. I mean, I know everybody everybody claims something different, but, you know, I really haven't been keeping track of who's been the fastest or, you know, who's done the best job or who's, you know, gone to each and every one personally or anything like that. I know everybody has their own style, so that's something that's just kind of impossible to gauge in my eyes.
Sure. Now, with placing the caches here, landowners, you know, I don't know much about the desert there. Is there landowners to contact even to place these caches on? And is that something you guys did?
That land out there is BML land, basic land management, and most of it's open range. They've, I think they've got people that are leasing the land. I'm not exactly sure, but there's open cattle, you know, that you cross cattle guards and there's cattle out there roaming free and stuff like that, which isn't a problem if you're going, you know, 5-10 miles an hour from cache to cache. But it's when you're coming back at night, we have concerns about people, you know, because these cows are dark, you can't see them. But for the most part, it's just basic. Nevada has a lot of land that's just not inhabited. It's just Nevada land, I guess you could say.
Well, I understand that there was some issue with Nye County, though. What is that issue, and are there any updates on that?
Well, for the most part, the issue was the few tractor-trailer trucks that use that route to transport their goods had reported to the DOT that there were cars stopped in the travel lanes. And you know, after so many complaints, the DOT decided to take notice and see what was going on. And basically what it was is there are several caches along the way that are hidden on the tenth of a mile post. And we discovered that cachers were stopping on the roadway so they could place their passenger next to the cache rather than pulling off to the other side of the post so they can grab the cache themselves. So that's what was causing the main problem. That, and along the way there was some construction zones and cachers were being told to just continue through the construction zone, but they were bound and determined to get the caches through that zone, so they were stopping for the caches in the midst of construction. So that caused additional problems. But in the meantime, you know, like, I know there was rumor that the DMT was instructed to remove caches. Every cache that they saw or knew of its placement, they were instructed to remove it, which we've later found out is not true. The DOT has not instructed any of their employees to remove caches. And, you know, the most recent news is the Nye County Commissioner, her name's Lorinda Wickman, she has spoken to all concerned parties and officials, and she has spoken to us, and she's deemed that as long as we move those caches that are on the mileposts off, you know, a little bit further off the road, you know, just the way the rest of our caches are hidden, that everybody will be happy and everything will be fine, because that'll cause the cachers to get down off the roadway just like they were doing for the other 50% of the hides that are on that highway. So we do have permission from BLM. They have granted permission for us to move those caches further off the road, which becomes BLM land at that point once it's off the easement. And everybody's going to be happy as soon as we make those changes, which probably going to take us a few weekends, and they're aware of that, and they said that, you know, that's fine as long as we're doing something about it, just have it taken care of and everybody be happy.
Well, that's definitely good to hear, at least that, you know, the people are willing to work with you guys and to be able to keep these caches there and you know, again, bring more people to the area.
Yeah, they're thrilled that, you know, I think when they named it the Extraterrestrial Highway, I believe it was back in the mid-90s or whatever that they did that officially, their hopes was to bring tourism a little bit out of Vegas for people to see the countryside. But I think now that we've done this, they're thrilled at the attention that this has given the Extraterrestrial Highway and the area out there as well. And they definitely don't want to see it go away. You know, they've expressed their enjoyment of what we've done, and they said that it's incredible that we're bringing these people out there, because really we have international travelers coming to Las Vegas just to go out into the middle of the desert. So
nice.
That's got to be something.
It's been a different thing. They usually come to Vegas and stay down in the casinos, and we've I think that opening weekend we had people that drove down from Canada, Australia, Germany. It's incredible.
Yeah.
How many different people are coming over. Spain, It's just
New Zealand, even.
Now, we've also heard reports of that if field notes are used to log, please uncheck the ignore logs before on Groundspeak when uploading your notes. Otherwise, some field notes might get ignored because there's a geocaching.com bug with multiple field notes in the same minute and they ignore the ignore feature. So this is kind of a tip out there for you guys. If you guys are planning the ET Highway and you're using your field notes, make sure to uncheck that ignore caches before because you will lose some of your from some of your logs.
I hadn't heard that. That's interesting.
Now, is there anything else that you want to tell us about this trail? Anything like if we were going to plan a power trail like this, what are some advice that you give us?
There's somewhere near us so we can do it.
I bet that is pretty tough. You know, you guys have an awesome power trail and you guys can't even do it since it's your own.
Yeah, that's why we jumped on that Route 66 one as soon as we saw that. And we've also been keeping our eye on Oklahoma. I guess they're trying to stretch a trail of caches from one side of the state to the other. So we're kind of keeping an eye on the developments on that because Clay has family that lives there. So that would be perfect for us to visit them.
Yeah, definitely. Now, anything else that you guys want to make us aware of about these caches?
Just the main thing, we put them, I know there's people that don't like power trails and there's people that do them and love them. We mainly did it just because it hadn't been done. We thought it'd be fun and we wanted people to go out and have fun and enjoy the desert and it seems to be happening. We get emails all the time of people can't wait to come visit it or have visited it and I don't know. It's really been nice. It's a fun trail. We actually had to create a different account just so we wouldn't get inundated. You know, if five people go out and do that trail, we're getting, you know, 5,000, 6,000 emails. So we definitely had to do some altering so we didn't get our own personal emails flooded with people visiting that. But
sure.
It's been fun. We've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I've actually added ET001 to my watch list on my personal geocaching account. Just so I can see the logs, because that seems to be the one that everybody's really putting their, you know, true feelings into their logs with, and then the rest are just copy and paste logs, which we're fine with. That's what we expect. But, you know, some of these logs that you see on ET1, they're just the most incredible logs I've ever seen in caches. You know, people are really taking the time, and they're writing lengthy, descriptive logs, and the amount of pictures that they're uploading to that cache page are incredible. You know, you see all these great people having fun, and, you know, personally, I enjoy caching in a group, but everybody's caught on to that, and that's what's making this trail fun for everybody. It's not just finding the same cache over and over 1,000 times. It's getting out there with their friends and becoming more tight-knit and closer, you know, and they're sharing an experience. They're not just caching. They're experiencing something really great together. So I think that's the best part of it.
Well, we want to thank you guys for coming on the show tonight. There are bookmark lists out there of the caches, and we'll go ahead and link to that on our show notes at geocachingpodcast.com. Thanks again, guys, for coming out and hanging out with us tonight.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. We want to thank Lisa from Cache Advance for sponsoring this episode. Join us each Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call our voicemail line, and that's 206-3503-GPS, anytime, day or night, to leave us a message. Have a safe week and happy caching.